the other person. This is a great gift. We feel joy that the other is there. And we like to support this being of the other, that the other can be there in a good sense, in a good way, that he can be with me. Therefore, we want to be attractive, that the other also likes to be with me. And the other who loves me feels a joy that I exist. He wants to be with me. So the one attitude is, so good that you are. And the other is, I want to be good for you. Not with one single act, not just once. This is not love. It means an attitude. I want to support you. I want to do good to you. In all what I do, I am intending that there is something good for you. It does not mean, love never means, never is doing mean, being mean to the other. It wants development, improvement, maximize or optimization of life quality. My whole being should be supportive for that. I want it to be supportive in your, for your development, for your being the way you are. The Swiss psychiatrist Binswanger once said that love means to live a concern for the other. Love and concern is a form of love. And where there is love, there is concern. This is more relatedness than just being together. This is an active relatedness. There is my decision behind. There is my will. And this brings me into an attitude, a positive, supporting attitude towards the other. Saint Augustine said, Amo volo ut sis, which means I love, and this means I want you to be. I want you to strengthen in your being there, in your capacity, in your way, in your quality, that you are there. And Jaspers also says that the central determination of love is that love is generative, is a basis, which means that the love is the basis that future may happen between us, that it is generative for the future. Love is therefore, and this is the next point, is a decision. It is a decision, an expression, I want something, that you are you and that you feel well, that you stay well. Viktor Frankl says, or defines love as saying yes to a human being in the way how he or she is, and saying you to that other, to direct towards the person of the other. We can combine it and say, in the to what Frankl's idea about love, to say yes to a you or to a thou. Yes to you. If you think about the people you love or you are related, do you feel that yes to you, the way you are essentially? This yes is something which I do, which I decide for. So love starts by itself, by this relationship, by these feelings which come up. But it needs me to come to an attitude and to a decision for that what is going on. Good that you are the way how you are. Good that you exist. There is an interest in you, in the way how you think, how you feel, how you decide what is important for you. I like the way you speak, you work, you sing, you dance. I feel respect for you. And I like to show myself when I'm in presence with you. The loving, when we love, we want to be together. We want relationship. It is also a decision. We decide for taking time, and we want to take up closeness. We experience that we do good to each other, which means together we can be more than we are alone. Together I can be more myself. And you can be more yourself. Together, through this resonance of the essence, the two essences are adding, accumulating. And we are more. As a we are more than as an I and a you. Love also wants reality. Love wants that it happens in the world, in this reality. The reality is, or love wants to come to the earth. Love wants to be realized. Love is a profound desire to give. It wants to be materialized. We give flowers. We give presents, we make invitations, we do journeys together, activities. And in the partner relationship, in the partner love, we want sexuality. We want to live for the other in real life, not only by talking about it. It wants to come to earth. It wants to be born into this reality. Love doesn't want to remain a fantasy. At least it wants to become a poem, if something else is not possible. And this connection to the reality also implies that love wants truth, needs truth. Wants to become true. Love does not support the lie. And so love helps us to believe in the other, to believe the loved person. And this can go on until to the love of God. And the last point, love wants perspective, future. Love wants duration. We want that it remains as it is. We want not to be separated. We want to have a life together, to have more time together. We want some security that this may go on, may continue. The love, when we love, the most important in life is to remain together, or something very important in life is to remain together, to live for you. It's so natural for parents that parents live for their children. we live for the partner when we love, as long as we love. I want to engage myself. And this means, this becoming fruitful means to transcend my own existence by giving myself into the other, for the other. This is again this generative power in love. To the giving comes a generosity to make something out of love. Therefore, love is very creative, generative. Love is a basis for art. Love wants to let take part the other in one's own life. And the natural form of this generosity of love and to share the common is to have a child. It's very good that normally we the children are created in an act of love. But of course, in the human life, it's not always ideal. So after this description of essentially saying this, having a feeling for each other which produces a closeness, which we are taking up, where in which we encounter the essence of the other, or the other encounters us, and we decide for it. Love has a decisional part, and then it becomes real. And on this basis of decision, we want to make it real and to bring it into a reality. On this basis, I want to bring up some specific questions about love. One question is, why do we love? There is a saying that we love because we are similar. We love only that person or that person which has some similarity with me. If there is no similarity, we will not start loving. Another observation or theory says we love because we are different. We are complementary. These are opposing poles. What do you think is love? Do we love because we are similar or because we are different? It would be interesting to have a short experiment to see how you see it. Who is in favor for because we are similar? Mm-hmm. And who is for the other pole, that because we are different? Yeah, it is about one third and two thirds, or half of the audience. And the rest is for both, yeah. You cannot decide yourself. Okay. Yeah. In psychology, the investigations shows that it is equal. Why? The similarity brings up a familiarity. When we have something common, we can take up with the other. It helps for the self-acceptance. It is fortifying. It contains a homoerotic part. When the similarity is something like I am. And it has some narcissistic traits. I love in you what I love in me. So if it's only the similarity, it wouldn't be enough. It needs also a bit of the opposing pole. The difference is inspiring, it's stimulating, it's challenging, it makes the relationship more vivid. We have opposed views. The difference is she wants to go to the sea in the vacation and I want to go to the mountains. So this is a lot of difference. And how can we bring that together? So we can change it from year to year. So, but and then I experience what I never would experience, to go to the sea. If I were alone, I would go to the mountains every year. But and so it is inspiring. It brings new aspects of life. And it is complementary to become whole. And it is fostering growth. But the danger is to become alien. If the difference is too big, then the partners may lose each other. Maybe the mirror neurons have to do something also with on this level. And here it is interesting to look at this central notion of Christianity, love your neighbor. He is like you. Love your neighbor. In Hebrew, the phrase goes different. As the Rabbi of Frankfurt once translated, Pinchas Lapide, who said, love your neighbor, and in Hebrew, if you translate Hebrew literally, it means he, you. He is like you. So this means that brings up the question, do we have to love ourselves first to be able to love the other? Because if the other is like me, then I must have access to myself to be able to love the other. Do we have to love ourselves first to be able to love the other? Yes and no. Yes, we must be able to live alone for being able to really love. If we are not able to stand on our own feet, then we become dependent. Then we give up our weight on the other, and this will be too much for the other. We must carry our life by our own. And in a good relationship, we don't need the other, but it's much nicer with the other. It has much more quality. But if we need the other, then love starts to strangulate the other. It is too much. We cannot give up the responsibility for ourselves. So we must mature and become ourselves and stand on our own feet. We need this relationship to ourselves, this access to ourselves. This opens the access for the other. Through the access to myself, I can empathize. I can feel what you feel. When I don't have a good relationship with myself, I'm losing you. And we can say in general, the way how I am with myself, how I am relating to myself, how I feel myself, I am with you. But we also need the other. We do not have to start loving ourselves to be able to love. We cannot even start loving ourselves. We must be loved first by parents and other people. Our capacity for loving ignites by the self-reference, or our capacity to love and our self-reference ignites in the love of others. When they love me, when they love us, then we experience that we are somehow a value, that we experience in the eye of the other, in the behaving of the other, that we represent something valuable and good. Love starts with the present, this present of love which we get from others. But our love for ourselves can unfold only in the love of the other. The love of the other makes the starting of our love of ourselves. In the New Testament, this self-reference is the basis for the agape, because it says, love your neighbor like yourself. So it gives the information, you must love yourself and do the same to the other. In the same way as you love yourself, you should love the other. So the self-reference is a precondition to be capable for love. But the self-reference is only pushed from the other, it starts by others and develops in this atmosphere, in this experience of being loved. It's interesting, the Hebrew version and the Greek version, this difference in the understanding, and these are two different cultures from the same starting point. He is like you, so don't love yourself, it doesn't matter. The Hebrew version and the Greek and Latin version says, yeah, you like yourself and take this as a model, as a role model, how you should love the other. What is the luck in love? What would you say? What is the luck you experienced in love? What is the most beautiful, rich experience you have in love, or you had in love? Maybe we can put it that way, that in love we can experience that there is someone who wants to share me with him or her, and vice versa. The experience that I am invited by someone to experience him or her totally, and to share him or her with me, to be invited into the life of somebody else. When we experience this invitation as beautiful, I think we may say, then I love really. When I want to be with the other and want to do good to him, and when it is nice with him, and beautiful, and rich, and when this happens also through the other, then we are in deep love. So deep that this love makes us ready to suffer. Love is deep passion. And passion means also suffering. When the other is suffering, I'm also suffering. I'm ready to take it and to share it. There is a Chassidic wisdom, Martin Buber brought it. One who loves feels what hurts the other. So we are ready to feel what is hurting, injuring, painful for the other. We want to protect the other from this. We are deeply open for the other person, and we let the other person come in the way he or she is, and we let him or her come until our heart. So passion, love as a passion, means I am ready to suffer with you. And love also causes suffering. Love is a passion which produces suffering, multiple suffering. Sometimes the suffering is a longing to the other. And longing can be very painful if it lasts long and we don't meet or can't come together. Or if love is not reciprocal. Or this suffering which comes along with love of not being fulfilled, of being limited. We hurt each other also when we do not want to hurt the other. It happens unwillingly. And we suffer all what the other suffers. And we produce the other suffering with what we suffer from. The resonance is so constant, not only for the positive, but also for the negative. So if we want to love, we must be ready to suffer. We all know that, especially with children. The small children, how they suffer when they get their teeth. We would like to take them away, that suffering, but we cannot. And we suffer maybe more than they suffer as parents. In love, there is a suffering from the glow and the longing for merging, for unity. For a merging which is never totally possible in this life. Because we always fall back into the singularity of our individuality. We can come close in the orgasm, we are for a second or two almost merged, and then we fall apart again. We cannot reach this ideal, this deep wish of unification. In love, we are never fully the same. We are not an exact replica of each other. The other does not correspond to me totally. The other is not me. And this may also make suffering. We are different, despite of this relationship. And this can produce a withholding in love, that we see that there are some differences which do not correspond to me, which I would like to have, but this partner doesn't have it. So we may withhold, because it's not totally ideal. And we may think, maybe somebody better comes up, shows up, and I wait. And if nobody comes, then we get married. A not ideal partner, and this is the rule. Before we get married, we normally are being in love. Being in love, what does it mean? Being in love can be compared with the paradise. It's the only rest of paradise which exists in our life. Being in love means there is no problem. But only for that period of time, of course. One feels like in heaven. One feels all energy and power. Doesn't have to sleep anymore, not that much anymore. Love itself, this personal love which we described, is, we described it as a phenomenological capacity. Love, personal love, is seeing the other. Being in love, or the infatuation, is blind. Why? In being in love, we see the other as I dream the partner, as I dream the other, as I have the desire that he or she should be. It is my representation which I love. This makes being in love so charming. There is no shadow side. It is simply paradisic. But in being in love, the activity is turning more around myself than around the other, around my projections, about my idealizations, about my needs and desires. They are projected towards the other. And one sees from the other his or her charm and erotic and attraction. And we fill up this gap of not knowing him with our fantasies and our projections. And therefore we don't see any problem, because we only see the positive, the attractive, and the gaps are filled up with our wishes. So everything is there. This is paradisic. The other is only a trigger for my representations. Therefore, the other can enchant us so much, and even the objects which are with which that person was in contact have a charm of it. A hair, for instance, a book, a present, something. This is this object-related love can lead to the fetishism. Fetish is an object which transports what we are in love with. Love pains, love sickness. What can we do? Love can really make us sick and weaken us. A separation, when we are in love and are separated, this makes us thinner, psychologically, physically, psychosomatically. And it may even bring us to the point that we lose our mind. It is wonderful in the opera Lucia di Lammermoor, this aria of the Lucia, how she loses her mind and becomes psychotic. What can we do? It is always helpful to share the love pain with others. And it's always good to talk with oneself about that pain, to go into the silence and to start a grieving process. In the grieving, we find back to ourselves in the depth, to our existence, to our yes to life again. In the grieving, we find back to our essence, which we have to get back, because in love, it is in resonance with another essence. It is also good to relate with religion, with art, or to look for new tasks, to go into life again. And there is an ultimate form to deal with such a situation, which is a very high form, a very personal form, that we can continue to live our love even when we are separated. How? We said that love means to have the attitude of I wish you well. And the person who loves can say that I had the feeling that my presence, my essence, does well to you. I hoped it, because I feel it from the other side, from you to me. So I hoped that, and I thought that my presence, in the way I see you, is doing well to you. But now you see it differently. And it's not sure who is right. Maybe you will regret it in a couple of years, which happens quite often. About 50% of separated partners live more or less together after 10 years. As an investigation in Switzerland shows. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe we were both wrong. But since I still love you, and since I still want to do well to you, I respect your opinion. If you think that it is the best to separate, to live another life, and not with me, all I can give you is the respect for your decision in the hope that you are right and that I'm wrong. And this is how I can live my love even in the absence of the partner. I must admit, not everyone is able to do that. And not everyone can do it soon, quickly after the separation. But I encountered many cases, many, many clients who were able to do that. And some of them brought it up by themselves. It is a human possibility to live love even in separation. But of course, this needs that I stand on my own legs, that I'm based within me, and that I have other resources. Because sometimes this love sickness cannot be overcome. When we are too much grown together, when we complete each other so well, then it can be the case that we cannot really overcome that pain. This is also a possibility. And I do not mean the symbiosis. In symbiosis, you have a catastrophe. Then you have a clash. I mean a healthy love, loving relationship. So we should not idealize, and we should not think that we are capable to do in every case to come to a clear healing. Such stories are stories for literature and for art. Jealousy is envy of relationship. It is a theme of self-value. Investigations show clearly that the lower the self-value, the higher the readiness for jealousy, the more jealousy is there. The higher the self-value, the more I know who I am and that the other person cannot take me away my self-value, and then I feel less jealous. Jealousy is the feeling that I do not belong to the other, that I am excluded. But I have the right to possess the other. I need, from my self-understanding, that you should be as nice, as kind to me as you are with the other person, or even more. Jealousy is not respectful. Jealousy is quite narcissistic. Jealousy wants to possess the other. And in jealousy, it is turning around oneself. Sexuality and love. Some remarks. Sexuality means both heterosexuality and homosexuality. Homophilia is also possible on the same personal level as heterophilia. Love and sex are not only directed towards procreation. Love and sex are directed towards community and to communication. And love is always open to something new, to a future, to a form of procreation. But it need not necessarily be a child. It can also be a shared idea, a project, a task, art, or just the celebration of love, of life. Sexuality is based in the body and in the psyche. Sexuality must happen through the body. Otherwise, it is platonic love. Merleau-Ponty describes sexuality as being in a bias. There is an ambiguity in sexuality. In sexuality, the other person is always subject and object at the same time. Subject who experiences, an object to me. And in sexuality, and this makes it sometimes a bit difficult, because it's maybe not always on the same level. It cannot be always equilibrated. Both sides are in sexuality, the personal side and the functional side. There is encounter, communication, which happens over the body and the senses, and which brings up a wholeness of experience. And at the same time, there is this functional level to satisfy a desire, a lust, the desire of living life, enjoying life. Sexuality makes love or makes a relationship graspable. And therefore we say there was something between them when they had some sexuality. Something. Love is graspable. Love becomes real, material in life. Sexuality does not necessarily love. Sexuality, we can enjoy sexuality also without love, without self-transcendence, without this personal dimension. The, in sexuality, we experience this vitality, this power of life, this joy of life, this zest for life. This is, of course, if it's pure sexuality, pure love or zest for life is the highest, it's not the highest possible form, because the personal dimension is lacking in that case. Therefore, sexuality in a partnership, in a combined with love, makes it complete. This, then sexuality brings love onto the earth and makes it real, makes an incarnation of love. But we should also see, and I think in the last decades it became much more spread and popular, that the particularized sexuality, the sexuality without love, can also be enjoyed. It means experiencing and enjoying a partial aspect of our life. It is tickling the senses when there is eroticism, because sexuality intends a wholeness. It may not reach it, but it goes into this direction. Erotic sexuality promises a lot, but it can keep that announcement only when the holistic attitude, when the personal dimension is also present, and when the psychic is in tune with it. Otherwise, the basis, the fundamentals is lacking. And when the sexual arousal ceases, then there is no further resonance. It is like a wine which has no aftertaste. Two more aspects, briefly. Fidelity and infidelity. Why is infidelity hurting us? Because in infidelity, we experience a loss of the uniqueness and singularity of our being. Infidelity, sexual infidelity, means that the other is is not there only for me in his roots, in his genitals. He's not only there for me in the deepest, and makes me exchangeable, makes me alien to him and to myself with another person. It means that the relationship, the love, comes into a reification, makes it for an end. It makes it an object. It does not correspond to my essence. And it hurts my self-value. When infidelity hurts, this means the other means more to me than just an object of lust. He is to me a person. But when infidelity brings up despair, then there is maybe more dependence. To overcome unfaithfulness, this needs time. We need to have to make new experiences of the, so that we can trust the other. And only out of these new experiences over maybe months or even a year or two, we can trust again and gain this security of the other. In partnership, there was an investigation made by Jörg Willi, who investigated the difficulties in partnership and the reproaches in partnership. And they show how love can disappear, how the person can become lost under the claims of the other and under the expectations of the other. I bring you some few reproaches, what men reproach to women and what women reproach to men. There is the main reproach of men towards women is they are too controlling on the level of nesting, too controlling, too petty, that they want to tie down, to hold on, that they reproach the women to be too dependent, to not have enough initiative, that they want too much closeness. There's another cluster of reproaches which goes around the education of the men. Women have a tendency, which is a reproach of men towards women, that they want to educate their men. They reproach that you know everything better, that you want to be always right, that you are pedantic, dominant, unforgiving, patronizing. Maybe we should see it should be matronizing. And there is another cluster of emotional openness. Men reproach women, you are too emotional, too affective, too impulsive, not controlled enough, and transgressing borders. On the other side, women reproach men. I don't know if you have an idea what their reproaches are. You have a tendency to get away, to be unapproachable. You don't have enough time. You let me too much alone. You do not engage. You do not take over responsibility. You do not enough for household and children. And another cluster is the lack of recognition. You don't take me serious. You don't listen to me. You remain uncommitted, unattentive. And another cluster is the emotional inapproachability. You do not speak to me. You are not communicative, egocentric. You are not, I cannot feel you. You are distant. You do not let me come close to you. You do not empathize. You only want. Do you have an idea? It is interesting that all these reproaches that the couples have the conviction, 80% of the couples have the conviction that these reproaches are changeable. They are not fixed. There can be done something to make it happen in a good sense. I want to close with the last few lines of a love song of the poet, the German poet, Rainer Maria Rilke. And in this poet, he brings together the beauty of personal love, of encounter in love. And it says, but all that touches you and touches me contracts us like a bow that from two strings draws forth a single voice. From two strings draws forth a single voice. Upon which instrument are we two strung? And who, pray, is the fiddler who holds us in his hand? O sweetful song.